My apologies to all the kids, because if I had known all you kids were going to be here, I would have planned something altogether different. It would have been a fun evening, but I didn't know you were going to be here. So, I'll do it tomorrow night, though. When at the Festival of Inspiration, one of the presentations I made was visiting Radhakund Shyamakund, but I didn't finish. Did part one. So tomorrow is part two. Nice pictures of the places of Krishna's pastimes at Radhakund and Shyamakund and the Leelas, so kids can get absorbed. Everyone can get absorbed. That's tomorrow evening. So, what I thought I would do this evening is going to bore the heck out of the kids, but just give a little kind of an overview. I've been lecturing sequentially on the first canto, and I'm up to towards the end of the fifth chapter, so I can just kind of give you a high profile of those first chapters and come in for a landing and having a little explosion, like a focus. Prabhupada described on many occasions that everything we need to know to go back to Godhead is in the first canto. So if anybody here wants to go back to Godhead, then please become immersed in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. According to Padma Purana, the first two cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam represent the lotus feet of the Lord. So, if you take shelter of the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, you've taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And once you've found the lotus feet of the Lord, you found the Lord. You have progressively access to all of the other features of the Lord's form. And in that first canto, second canto, very strong emphasis is there on the mood of service, the mood of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead with great clarity of purpose, great clarity of submission, and great clarity of the object, the Supreme Lord. But we find very strong emphasis also on the process of devotional service itself, how to approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So that's the first and second cantos. And the division of the first canto is wonderful. The first three chapters, in one sense, is a summary of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you learn the first three chapters, you can learn the whole first canto, you can learn the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. You go back to Godhead. So, in the first three chapters, there's the Mahima section, the very beginning, the glories of what the Srimad Bhagavatam is, and the speaker, Shukadeva Goswami. In the first verse of the first chapter of the first canto is, according to Srila Jiva Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's presentation of commentary on Gayatri Mantra, because the whole of the Bhagavatam is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra, as stated in the Puranas themselves. Satyam Param Dhimahi This dhimahi phrase is very specific in Sanskrit. There's different ways of saying meditate, like dhyana, dharana, and samadhi. There's different ways of speaking about meditation. Dhimahi specifically invokes the message of and the gravity of Gayatri mantra. Satyam param dhimahi. So, how Gayatri mantra is glorifying not the sun, not the impersonal Brahman, but the personality of Godhead Krishna. How that is so is described and disclosed within the Bhagavatam. So, then the subject matter of the Bhagavatam is presented in the form of 6 questions, 6 answers, very important questions, very important, very potent answers. And repeated theme in the first canto is the qualifications of the speaker, the qualifications of the receiver, how one should receive the speaker, how one should receive the message from the speaker. It's a science, it's not casual. And the qualifications of the listeners, in one case it's Shaunaka, the personality who's heading the sages. So after he hears the answers to their 6 questions, now I'm all the way in chapter 4 of the first canto, he hears the answers to these questions, and he's so enlivened. He jumps up. He's the eldest amongst... So the sages that had assembled at Naimisharanya, this is after the Srimad Bhagavatam is narrated, they've understood the bad news that Kali Yuga has begun. Krishna has left. The personality of Kali has entered. He's doing his nefarious thing. They're rishis, they're seers, they can see into the future, and they know the degradation. They described it very, very deliberately, explicitly to Suta Goswami. So these are the leading personalities on the planet, and senior most amongst them is Shaunaka. So he's not an unqualified person. But he is so enlivened. He literally, spontaneously, just jumps up and says, Suta, Suta, Mahabaho, oh, your answers are so wonderful. Please tell us more. You were so fortunate that you heard, you were present when Shukadeva Goswami spoke. And how qualified is Shukadeva Goswami? And they described the qualifications of the speaker, Shukadeva Goswami. And how qualified was the listener? And they described the qualifications of one who was a listener to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Surely they discussed many nice topics. This Srimad Bhagavatam was delivered by Vyasadeva unto you. And even Vyasadeva was in the audience to hear it from you. And Narada Muni, your spiritual master, was in the audience to hear it from you. Shukadeva Goswami, so surely you were so fortunate. Not only you've heard the message, you understood the message. And not only have you understood the message, you've assimilated the message. You're living that message. Oh, Sutta. This is a qualification of an audience. Eagerness, Prabhupada emphasizes again and again. Not casual. Not, duty is good, but eager. to receive transcendental knowledge. Please describe, just like so many things in this world, even transcendental things, even Krishna makes his appearance. Srimati Radharani makes her appearance. Govardhan Hill makes its appearance. Transcendental world appears in this realm. How did the Srimad Bhagavatam describe? How did Vyas come to write the Srimad Bhagavatam? So, this is a nice question, but it's also relevant for understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. Because how does the Srimad Bhagavatam, what is its position in relation to all the rest of the Vedas? Like there's a nice library in the bookshelf over here. So if one of those books in the bookshelf was just glowing, golden radiance, oh, look at that book, it's on the bookshelf, it's just radiant. How did it come to be there? What is the history? How did it manifest? They knew that, but it's not that they didn't have information. When persons ask questions, it's not always an information-based question like we're used to, like in school. There's some information out there, and what you're supposed to do is get the information over here, put it on your hard drive, and someone presses a button and it can come out, and you get an A. Or you take several pieces of information, synthesize it, put it together very intelligently and present it, and you get an A+. So this isn't just information transferal. They want the enlivenment that Sutta has from having heard from Shukadeva Goswami, another very important part of receiving transcendental knowledge, the disciplic succession method. It's not scholarship. It's receiving the empowerment in disciplic succession. So how did Vyas start it off? So very quickly, chapter 4 describes Vyas. So Sutta begins his answers to their many questions. Vyas, being the qualified personality that he was, the phrase that's used several times is Amogha Drik. He had the capacity to see perfectly. You know, not like just he had a good pair of spectacles and the optometrist certified he could see whether it was an E up or down or sideways or left or right. He could see spiritually. And he could see beyond time. And he looked into the future. And what he saw, Sutta describes, what he saw was more of what the sages of Naimisharanya some time ago had seen. And what he saw was terrible. And getting worse and worse as Kali Yuga progressed. And he could see not only what would happen, but he could see the root cause of why it would happen. And he describes in the Bhagavatam, the root cause was too much attachment for matter. And because of too much attachment for matter, the natural quality of the soul, consciousness of the soul, was covered. And so that one couldn't understand oneself or one's own self-interest, one couldn't see the proper way to conduct one's life, one couldn't see the goal of life. So everything became blurred and covered and dark. More than the previous ages. Too much affinity for matter. So Vyas, because he was who he was not only a seer, but he was a literary person. His gift from Krishna, just like some people can play mridanga very nicely, and some people can cook very nicely, some people can poke their father's eye very nicely. Some people can dance very nicely. Some people can write computer programs very nicely. Some people can do things nicely. Vyasa's gift was, this is relevant because it's going to play into the section where we don't, we're not just going looking overview, we're going to go down, drill down a bit. Each of us has some propensity, something, some gift that Krishna has given, or several gifts that Krishna has given. The tendency Vyas saw in Kali Yuga was a person to become too much enamored by that and try to become the enjoyer of that and the fruit of that, the fruits of work, and thus become completely covered of where that came from, the purpose of that, what, who we are. Covered, deluded, and sinful as a result, not guided by higher principles or standards of life. So, being a literary person, he decided, I'll take the Vedas and make it easier for people to understand. Now, this next part is very important. Listen carefully. According to Suta Goswami, he divided the Vedas into four according to different practices that would allow people to, through sacrifice, to fulfill their desires at the same time, gradually elevate themselves through the modes of nature. And then he gave another portion, a subset of those. What's behind that is reaching the Supreme. So he wrote the philosophical portion that supports and explains the sacrifice portion, Karmakanda, Gyanakanda portion of the Vedas, where a stronger emphasis goes to the Supreme. Then, so that it would be very clear and understandable by people in this difficult age of Kali, he supplied the very same understanding through factual historical reference, examples of what was in the Shrutis through the Smritis. Very, very explicit in the verses. I'll say it again so that it's real clear. The message of the Shrutis is the message of the Smritis. The message of the Smritis is the message of the Shrutis. The difference being, it's woven in the context of historical events, so that one can understand, oh, that's what it means by the example. It's non-different in principle and in essence, deliberately by the author Vyas. And then he wrote Vedanta Sutra to give the essence of all of it in little codes. And then you know the rest, what happened. When he finished the close of chapter 4, he's sitting back looking, how did it come out? And he's there's several important qualities of Vyas. One of them that's indicated, highlighted in fact, is that he's selfless. He did what he did simply for the benefit of others. There wasn't any personal motivation. And it was perfectly done. And yet, so he was also self-honest. It's described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Lord Brahma, before he even created beings, he created the conditions for beings. Like Prabhupada so many times described. If you move from Detroit to Atlanta or something, you got a job transfer, all the living accommodations are already there. And according to where your job is and what your income is and other kinds of considerations, where the temple is, where other considerations are, you, according to your qualification, indeed, you get a living space. So, similarly, Brahma, even before the bodies were there, even before the residential places were there, before the planets were there, before the species were there, before anything was there, the conditions were set up. And one of the conditions was self-deception. In fact, that's the first one. Then forgetfulness, like the capacity to delude oneself. And then the application of that. Forget who you are. The application of that is take on a false identity. The application of that is think that paraphernalia, the objects of creation can be possessed by oneself, a false sense of proprietorship. And then enmity and envy, even before they're beings. The whole setup was just like the whole show was ready. And bloop, living entities are injected in that atmosphere. What's going to happen? All those things are going to happen, starting with self-delusion. So Vyas was not self-deluded. So because he was not self-deluded, when he looked within himself, he found that he wasn't satisfied. And when we're not in a self-deluded state, we can also look inside and feel the same thing. We're all quite familiar with that feeling of something's missing, something isn't right. Prabhupada would say, the sand and the sweet rice. Sweet rice is very nice, but sprinkle some sand in the sweet rice and you can't eat it. Or rocks in the spinach. You can't spit it out. You can't chew it. So that wasn't Vyasa's condition. He was free from self-delusion. He was perfected soul. And his actions were completely selfless. And he still felt dissatisfaction. One of the refrains in the... This is very important. One of the refrains in the first three chapters is this phrase, chapter 1, chapter 2, it appears about 6 times, chapter 3, now again chapter 4. Satisfaction. Yenatma suprasidati. Yayatma suprasidati. The phrase comes again and again. Suprasana. Besides, it's something that everybody wants to be happy. It's natural. It's good to want to be happy. But the material condition of life doesn't permit it, even your vyas. Now, Prabhupada explains, it's like Arjuna, who took the role of being deluded so that Krishna could instruct him, so he could instruct us. So Vyas is a literary incarnation, manifesting the literary incarnation of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's not deluded like we're deluded. He's placed in that position in order that some instructions can be imparted, how to get undiluted. That's for us. So, quickly, Narada suddenly appears at his ashram. Narada is very expert. He knew just when to appear at the right time, the right place, and say the right thing and take care of the problem. So when he arrived in Narada's ashram, or Vyasa's ashram, his first expression was basically, Vyasa, you don't look so good. What happened? And Vyasa said, I don't know. I just completed all this writing as my service unto you and Krishna, but I'm not feeling satisfied. And I don't know what I did, why I'm feeling that way, what I did wrong. But you're, practically speaking, you're in touch with the super soul. My asking you is as good as asking super soul. And you're the son of Brahma, who directly heard everything from the personality of God, and who then explained everything to you, so surely you know And he does know. But it's the submission and the clear understanding of why Nara should know, and his, although as qualified as Vyas is, his submission to his spiritual master, Narada. Please tell me. And Narada's reply is, oh, son of Parashara Muni. He's invoking his heritage, Parashara Muni, great sage, and even achieved benediction for his selflessness and his sobriety and his forgiveness, his great qualities as a devotee, as a Vaishnava. And perfectly learned it, the speaker of Vishnu Puran. You're his son. Surely you must know that, oh, son of Parashara Muni, are you satisfied with taking self-realization to be found through the Sharira and Manasa? Because the word Atma in Sanskrit can mean these three things. Body, it can mean mind, or it can mean the soul. So, to recognizing the fallen condition of people of the age of Kali, he accommodated their demands for sense satisfaction, their demands for their minds becoming satisfied, peaceful, or addressed. But what about the soul? There's the root. So what the Srimad Bhagavatam is doing, what Narada is instructing him is, so as far as knowledge of Brahman, A+, as far as principles of sacrifice, A+, as far as specifically and sufficiently glorifying the personality of Godhead, F. There's your report card. Yes, you presented something, but mixed to the degree that these people that you know, they're too much attracted and addicted, absorbed in matter. You made it sound like it's authorized, it's bona fide. Vyas said, it's okay. Let's jump in the pool, the material pool. It's Vedic. Vyas, there it is, right in the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas. It's authorized. You've encouraged them, Vyas. Shame on you. He doesn't use the exact same, but he says it's unbecoming of you. Nice way of saying shame on you. Quite unreasonable. You're concerned about the influence of this age of Kali. Here's the antidote. Just describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Describe the Supreme Pure. And what will happen is these dense coverings of the souls in the age of Kali, covered by so much matter and affinity for matter, it will gradually purify them. You want a gradual purification? Bring this in contact with those souls. And those that are elevated personalities, they'll very quickly come to the position of great satisfaction. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam is for Paramahamsas down to the people who are grossly influenced by the age of Kali and everyone in between. It's for all persons. But the principle is, Narada describes to Vyas, is, here's what I want you to do. Fix your mind again and again and again. Absorb your mind, absorb your consciousness in the personality of Godhead. And that which you experience through that absorption, describe that in your literature. So he gives him two-part assignment. Instruction, a little homework assignment. Even Vyasadeva gets homework. So, absorb your mind in total fixed presentation upon the personality of Godhead. And that which you realize, then you write such a literature. And such a literature, people are attracted to so many literatures he describes. It's just natural. People like to hear some subject matter. Describe that subject matter. Give that essence in such a way. Factual historical information is there, but the essence of the personality of Godhead will be very strong, prominent, central. Then you'll find satisfaction. He says, if you're not feeling satisfied by what you wrote, how are your readers going to be satisfied? But if you're satisfied by this highest platform of spiritual qualification that you have, oh, Vyas, you're qualified. And he gives the description of the author of transcendental literature. You're perfect in tapa and knowledge and all high-grade activities. You're a literary incarnation, and you are to manifest the literary incarnation of the Lord for this age. Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyas, you can do it. Go, team, go. He's like encouraging him. And then he just shifts and says, let me show by my own example. He doesn't introduce it exactly that way, but he uses himself as the example of how a conditioned, completely unqualified, covered little living entity, an obscure personality, can become a perfected soul by this very process. He uses his own previous life as an example, which again helps us understand through factual historical events how the knowledge that's there in the Vedic literature can be applied. And one of the wonderful things about Krishna consciousness is to have examples of persons of ideal character. And so rather than just reading about it in a book, you can see in the life, oh, here's what a sannyasi is. Oh, here's what an ideal householder is. Here's what, how to raise your children in Krishna consciousness. That's what it looks like. Because when you have examples, then you can inquire from those persons how they perform their duties. And then although we're different individuals, we'll understand the application of principles. So Narada is doing the same thing. He's using his own example to his disciple, Vyas, to explain how this process works. So he describes that he was just a young boy. And he didn't even have a father, or didn't know where or who his father was. He just had his mother. And his mother was a Shudra, taking care of an inn. And one time, a group of sages came to that place where she was serving, and he just assisted her. And I wish I had something that could help the kids stay more attentive. Anyway. They gave it a good try. He describes his qualities. He was gentle. He didn't talk too much. Sometimes children are non-stop talking too much. Or some big children are like that too. Talk. And generally those persons, there's not much substance in all that talking. But Narada wasn't like that. He was very calm and quiet, peaceful. And he wasn't frivolous with, like many children can be. He just was very, very calm and very happy to be in the company of these sages. So he had submissiveness. He had a very nice service attitude because he was helping his mother. He just helped them bring the meals and little menial chores. Take care of, fetch this, get some wood for the fire, take care of their clothing. And in their company, naturally, he heard them discussing topics. So he got a chance to hear. And he became very attracted to hear. And he would just sit and hear and listen. He describes that as he would listen, he felt changes in himself. He felt that this the message that they were presenting was very attractive. And as he became more and more attracted to the message, he described that he could realize that this body that he was within was an obstacle. It was simply a dull matter, a covering of the soul, and somehow given to him. He didn't just like hear about it or read about it. He was realizing it because of his submissive quality. He became very detached from temporary and very attracted to the spiritual platform, the platform of the soul. The sages, they gave him an opportunity to take the remnants of their food, and he felt great spiritual transformation taking place, because, of course, we all take prasadam regularly. But it was his mood of regard for the sages and having the opportunity to take their remnants was the special quality that carried him to another level of consciousness. And they stayed for the rainy season and the autumn season. And then when it became time for them to go, Sutta describes, that they instructed him in very confidential knowledge. And Prabhupada explains what that confidential knowledge is. It's knowledge of devotional service. But then Prabhupada goes even more deeply. He says the confidential knowledge, even about devotional service, is that Krishna very much wants us to come to him. So we're in this covered state. In the covered state, we don't recognize that at all. We don't even recognize God, or if there's some idea of God, it's a very faint, distant, unclear idea of God. Some platitude, mainly, unfortunately. But through this association, his conception became very, very clear. This confidential knowledge not only attracted him to Krishna, the personality of Godhead, but he understood how strong is the desire that the Lord has for us to come to him. So in other words, the process of devotional service is not just dependent upon our own effort. It's Krishna's kindness and mercy drawing us to him. Prabhupada is discussing this so wonderfully in his Bhaktivedanta purports. So much is that mercy that one can then let go. This is an important. Now I'm going more deeply into the section that I've been reading from up to this evening. While we all have, we'd be somewhere else other than here if we had some other interest. We have an attraction for Krishna and serving Krishna. But we also have very strong conditioning to the bodily conception of life, and with the bodily conception of life, fruitive tendencies like having always like a deep stain in our consciousness, having this expectation of how I'm going to get something from what I give and do. Refruitive. It's a mode of passion. Selfless service is, that's a nice idea, but we're even with selfless service, we're expecting some appreciation. Oh, how selfless you are serving. And if we don't get it, it may not feel so good. What to speak if we get the opposite? But, gee, it happens all the time, doesn't it? All the time. The very same people you're trying so carefully to try to serve somehow that they think something else. It happens in this world. So, to leave that behind so that one can be in this most confidential position of serving Krishna simply out of attraction for Krishna, simply for pleasing Krishna, to come to pure devotional service, comes from this descending mercy. Krishna wants to give that all the time. There isn't a time when Krishna doesn't want to give it. But we're not receiving it. Even he's like, hello, wake up. He's given the message in so many different ways. So Narada's giving the example of how he got it. He got it through this descending mercy process, his humble service, his sense control, his deep sense of appreciation for the sages, and most prominently the process of hearing. So then naturally that brought a change of his heart. Change of heart. And thereby he felt Krishna was picking him up. And we can feel that too, is the idea. These two things, very simple in our philosophy. I've been, the last 4 days in different places, I've been saying the same thing. But it's true. We must make some effort, but we also must receive mercy. The most confidential part of transcendental knowledge is Krishna is merciful and he'll help you. The mercy is available. Access it, please. Receive it. Acknowledge it. Open the heart, receive that mercy, and serve Krishna. And then Narada says, all activity should be done in that way. Here's the... Oh, Brahmana, learned Vyasa, it is decided by the learned that the best remedial measure for removing all troubles and miseries. Because he said, I'm feeling miserable. So what's the remedy for removing that misery? Dedicating everything to the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada explains in the purport, that principle is karma yoga. But how you can get the personality of Godhead focused is the process of hearing. And then you can connect your activities through that process of hearing to the highest platform. Here's how Prabhupada expresses it. The best thing, after all, is to get relief from all material activities. It's like I've, about 2 weeks ago, I was giving a presentation at Intel in Portland, Oregon. It was a very interesting experience. There was about 180 people in the audience. And it was mostly Americans, a few Orientals, and a few Indians. Because many times at those corporate offices, it's the other way around. It's 90% non-resident Indians and sprinkling of some other people. But this particular place, it was the other way around. So they hadn't had any contact with anything Vedic. So the topic was stress management, a spiritual approach. So I started by saying, the best method of stress management is to not have any. That's called Vaikuntha, no anxiety. So I just come to the spiritual world, and there's no anxiety. But you have to have a qualification to get to the spiritual world, so we'll go down a couple notches. We'll manage the stress that we have. So how do you manage the stress that you have? There has to be some way of linking your consciousness with Vaikuntha, this place of no anxiety. Then I went down and down and down and down and down and down and down. And at the end of the presentation, so I said, we have now 10-15 minutes left. Would you like to just ask questions? Or would you like to do some of this linking with Vaikuntha? Would you like to do some meditation? Meditation! So we passed out beads and they all chanted. All these nice American people that never had any contact. And, you know, they were, because it's this stressful, it's a stressful atmosphere. And I'm sure it's a little stressful in Detroit sometimes too. Maybe in the workplace and, you know, the things that you all have to deal with. So what Prabhupada is saying here is, the best is Vaikuntha. The best thing is, after all, to get relief from material activities and engage oneself completely in hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. But, in the case of the absence of such an opportunity, that's very gentle, in case we're attached and we can't just do that all the time, one should try to engage in the service of the Lord. Everything for which he has specific attraction. And that is the way of peace and prosperity. So this is like the dovetail program. But the dovetail program or karma yoga can be elevated to bhakti yoga and shuddha bhakti by joining it with the hearing and chanting process, if done properly. All that we need is hearing and chanting for spiritual perfection. But, in case we don't have that opportunity, in case there's other attachments or things like that in life, that's okay. Join those things with hearing and chanting and then dedicate those things with very clear focus upon the personality of Godhead. And that will carry you to Shuddha Bhakti. In Sri Brahma Samhita, text 61, towards the end of the whole Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma discusses the same thing. He's face to face with the personality of Godhead, and he's already heard and chanted Brahma Samhita with full realization of the personality of Godhead, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. And then he says, O Lord Vishnu, my Father, I have this urge. I want to create a universe. So we may want to write a software program or raise a family or something or other. You know, we know ours isn't create a universe. But it's to do something. So he asks the Lord, isn't that something going to get in the way? Or should I just like drop it? But how can I drop it? Because I have this. He was given the urge by the personality of Godhead to create a universe because he's so qualified. And each of us has some ability that's God-given and we're supposed to use it in God's service, whatever that something is. But it's entangling in fruitive reactions if we don't have the purity of heart. So the Supreme Lord says when those activities are joined properly with the hearing and chanting activity, then they can be as elevating as the direct activities of devotional service, hearing and chanting. And lo and behold, Narada says the same thing to Vyas. He says, oh, good soul, does not a thing applied therapeutically cure a disease which was caused by that very same thing? Prabhupada gives the example of overindulgence in milk products can make an illness, but then certain milk products with different medicines can cure the same problem. Or the thorn removing the thorn. Or the piece of wood, like the tree of material attachments, the deep, deep roots, the banyan tree metaphor is used here. You can cut a branch and use the branch as a handle for the axe and cut the tree down. He uses this example. So, the message for the evening is, the Bhagavatam is teaching us primarily the Bhagavat Marg, the process of hearing and chanting. That's the essence. And through that hearing and chanting, to transform the heart when the hearing and chanting is done properly. Some of you were at the Festival of Inspiration, and boy, was it a Festival of Inspiration. And some persons who had been there shared, you know, what their highlights were, and several mentioned the Nama Yajna, that three and a half, whatever it was, I couldn't keep going, program of kirtan, just transforming. Now, how do you, so the question, some questions were raised. How do you carry that so that you stay enlivened, such an enlivening experience? So it's a festival of inspiration, and you come back to your place of work and, oh my God. Or even as you're driving back before you get there, it's, right? And then the question is, how do we stay up there? At least sustain that to some degree, that inspiration. It's the direct hearing and chanting gives spiritual strength. It purifies the soul. To sustain that, because we have our material condition of life, we need to direct our activity to satisfy the personality of Godhead and continue the chanting that you do on a daily basis and the sangha when you come together and have nice kirtan, where it's directed to the personality of Godhead. And continue to make that effort. So that effort in the right association, just back to the example of Narada himself, in the right association, the Bhaktivedantas, those great souls, they left him, but he kept going. Because he was feeling their mercy. And he was abiding by their instructions. It specifically says, Narada states that as his qualification, as the receiver. He stayed with the instructions and he stayed in resonance with those who instructed him. He felt deep gratitude in his heart towards them and therefore applied that. And he kept moving on the spiritual path, becoming more and more elevated. Until he literally, face to face, saw the personality of Godhead. And it's not just a remote situation, it's something that the Bhagavatam wants us to also experience and, you know, receive that same benefit. So the medium of that, so the essence of it is this hearing and chanting, and the quality of how we do our hearing and chanting, and the quality of how we carefully guard against offenses when serving the other devotees and serving the deities and the other forms of nama-parad. Very carefully guard against those things and nurture that hearing and chanting process. Cultivate it very, very carefully. Then, as described here, that consciousness carries into our activities and it directs our activities to please the personality of God. That's the message found here in the fifth chapter to be continued. Any discussion? We still have 3 kids remaining. It's amazing. 4. Congratulations, guys. Yes. Hare Krishna.
How do we recognize the greatness in everything, and how do we continuously appreciate the greatness? Because our conditioning at some point of time overcomes that appreciation or the identification of the greatness in anything.
In short, it's just, it depends upon the quality of hearing. And our quality of hearing, this first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam emphasizes again and again and again and again, it's the degree of submission will help determine the quality of our hearing. Because the message is pure. And if the deliverer of that message is also qualified, then it's going to be transparently transmitted to us. And there's submission to both the message and the deliverer of the message and the object of the message. That's the process of bhakti. So the quality of hearing is going to determine the answer to your question, and the quality of our submission will determine that. In 434 Bhagavad Gita, Krishna answers your question. Tadvidhi, that person who wants to know, tadvidhi panipatena, submission, pariprashnena, prashna, inquisitive, asking questions, inquiring about, and sevaya. When one hears, one applies it. And that's what Narada says. Through that application of what he heard, the most confidential knowledge became realized. It wasn't just information. Or, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadavaha. That phrase appears several times in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes Srinvanti Gayanti Granati Abhikshnasaha. But hearing, repeating, internalizing, bringing within your heart that message, then it becomes your life. It doesn't leak out. Doesn't escape. It grows. And the process of continued hearing waters that creeper of devotion. Yes. Yeah? You know the verse? Gyaninas. Very good. So there has to be some confidence that the person that you've approached is somewhere in the vicinity of a tattvadarshi. You know, they have the qualification to deliver the real thing, and the qualification to deliver the real thing, like the sages say to Sutta, or Vyasa says to Narada, or one has to be able to look at those persons from whom one is hearing, that they heard from the right source. And they went through that process, Shrinvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti. So they've not only heard it, they've understood it, and they've understood it, they've realized it. They're living it. That's special. That's the qualification needed. then find such a person, then pranipat, prashna, seva. We carry those qualifications and then we'll receive. He'll impart knowledge unto us. There's the mercy. There's our effort, and then there's the mercy. Both are needed. Anything else? You're making it easy for me.
Krishna Maharaj. How do we know that our consciousness is purified? Because after hearing and chanting and doing Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga and focusing on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how do we evaluate our consciousness purified? Do we need to keep looking at the progress, how much our consciousness purified, or just keep going? What's the process?
We have to regularly, if not constantly, at regular intervals, monitor. No quality control, right? So you're asking, what are the standards by which we can monitor? Is that what you're asking? Or are you asking, should we? Yes, we should. And what are the standards? Several. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives one very prominent one, and that is detachment from matter. Nirvritta Tayashar Upagiyamana, that verse, when one's trishna, one's thirst for material things, just of its own accord goes down. Not just, you know, there's a will to overcome that pushing, that urge, but advancement is automatically subsiding. So we can, you know, check, do a little litmus test. See, is it acidic or basic? What's the pH? How are we doing? We can see how attentive, how eager we are for hearing. We get some notification that there's some opportunity for hearing. So right away, there's some eagerness to go, instead of finding the million and one things that are always there to keep us from doing that. Mood of service. Not just... sometimes devotees need to be trained how to say no. Because they just say yes all the time and they just get overwhelmed with all the things that they're doing. So mood of service doesn't mean only always saying yes, but it means those things that we do in the very, very deeply in a mood of service to others. Another is that we're careful about offenses when we're doing what we do. Another is that we have some regular habits and even a taste for diving into the holy name and diving into the scriptures and relishing. I had a nice experience spending time with Giriraj Maharaj. And he's a relisher. And we were having some conversation and then he went to the bookshelf and got Chaitanya Charitamrita and was looking up a reference of, you know, to recall once again exactly how Prabhupada put it and put it back. and that made him think of another thing and then another thing, and he had like 5 books laid out. It was just like absorbed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we're just having a discussion. But you know, one thing led to the next thing, led to the next, you know, just deeply immersed in Gaura Lila and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then we left, and then he wanted to go back and look up a few more. It's just like, you know, just not dutifully, our genuine taste. Bhurijan Prabhu was sharing, so this is something that resonates with what Prabhupada wrote. Bhurijan's a householder, has 2 children, wonderful wife. He's very brahminical, and he accepted the responsibility. In fact, he pioneered this whole Bhakti Shastri curriculum. Then when he was working on Bhakti Vaibhav, he went to somewhere in New Zealand where nobody else was, and he was sharing with me that when he was reading, he would read for 8 hours a day, every day, for months. And he was sharing with me, you know, the first 3-4 hours were like just skimming in the surface. And it was only after the 4th hour, 5th hour, they really start tasting. And then the next day was, you know, 3-4 hours. So it takes some absorption. Practice. Even someone that is attracted may need to also practice. Like, you know, our chanting. A test is that we have a taste for the holy name. But we may, like, beat ourselves up because we don't have taste for the holy name. But that, you know, we shouldn't beat ourselves up. We should strive to go more deeply into the holy name. And it may take some commitment to do that. So yesterday was Ekadasi, and I don't know how often the devotees, especially in a weekday, that you have the opportunity to increase your chanting, but it's good if you can increase your chanting on Ekadasi and diminish the bodily demands, like fast in some way or another. And when there are opportunities like that to think, and then, you know, even thinking about it instead of not thinking about it is a sign, and then doing something where you make some increase and make some standard for yourself, not, you know, to show off to other people, but for going more deeply because you want to go more deeply. And then, you know, in association with others, go more deeply. Such tendencies are signs of spiritual advancement. And that doesn't mean to the neglect of other things, because there's so many things that we need to do in service. But find the time to do those direct devotional practices. They'll give impetus to spiritualize the other forms of service that we do. Those are signs of making spiritual progress. Nice question. Okay. Looks like we need some more kirtan. No? Yeah?
You said the goal was hearing and chanting. And if one is not able to do that all the time, then along with what you are doing, you should do hearing and chanting, and ultimately it will lead to the all the time hearing and chanting.
Well, I didn't say the goal is, Prabhupada, I'll read it again. Here's what Prabhupada says. The best thing is to get relief from all material activities. You know, when we leave the body, we're going to leave behind our material activities. Now, we have a body, so we have to do some practical things for this body. But, so, if that's in the absence of such an opportunity, we should engage in the service of the Lord. Everything for which one has specific attraction, take it to Krishna's lotus feet and place it there in devotion.
How do you think?
And combine the hearing and chanting process with that gesture of service.
Is there an example for me where we can get the inspiration?
I'm not sure. I mean, Narada is giving himself as an example. So two things come to mind. Just, I'm not sure it's what you're asking, but when in the matter of training, when I came to Ypsilanti and came in the Mahajan's home, one of the parents had a little girl, and one of the little girls, he had a nice little flower, and she was attached to the flower. But the mother wanted the little girl to give the flower to Maharaj. And she took her little hand and gave the flower to Maharaj. So she gave the flower to Maharaj and she held on to the flower. So I wiggled the flower a little bit, she let go, and I pulled it out of her hand. Then her mother said, "Now pay obeisances," and pushed her head to the floor. And then she reached her hand, she wanted the flower back. So that's called Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But the same activity, but, you know, do that in a practicing way and one can learn. Then another example is once I was visiting someplace. I was visiting in Singapore. And there's two places I've been where I you can't enter the country wearing devotional clothes, and that's one of them. And the Middle East is another one of them. I didn't know that once I entered the Middle East in devotional clothing, and the person that were picking me up, they ran the other way. Because it could be big. They were expecting I was going to end up in the jail or something. But anyway, so I came to visit, and then when I got picked up at the airport, I was in with a hat on, and just got, you know, regular Western clothing. And I got taken to the home, and then so it was like, you know, one of those overnight flights, so it was really early in the morning, so I just went upstairs to get dressed, you know, to shower and get devotional clothes on. There's a little girl, and we've gotten to know one another over a period of time, and she had made some gift, and she just couldn't wait to give me that gift, you know, like the little flower, but it was something in a little bag, and, you know, I was just finished putting my tilak on, still putting my dhoti on, and, you know, she just walked right in the room and said, "This is for you." I said, "Thank you very much. Let me finish putting my dhoti on." She smiled, and, you know, when I looked inside, it was necklaces for deities. You know, mismatched color, mismatched sizes. So, how do you think I felt about that? You know, the beauty of the thing was not in, you know, the symmetry of the necklaces. I don't even have deities, what to speak of, you know, mismatched colors and mismatched sizes. But it's the mood of wanting to offer something that she could do to give to someone who she loves and respects very much. And that's been a very important lesson for me. It was a very touching moment. You know, other moments like that have certainly happened, but where it's not just like the kids sit during class and they make some drawing. And they want to give the, they're making the, their consciousness, they're making that for somebody. Sometimes after class they'll come and bring. You know, for them, that's an offering. What's the beauty of it? Once Muralidhar was describing to me, you know who Muralidhar is? He's one of Prabhupada's disciples and one of the artists, one of the award-winning the painting of Makkanchore, that beautiful painting, or the painting of Krishna's running and Mother Jasoda reaching out, and there's Nanda Maharaj and the gopis behind. No, his classic paintings that are just astounding, beautiful paintings. He's a very, very tall, very serious person. He's a very talented person. So I got to know Murali Dhar from when I was a new devotee. And he was describing to me once during prasadam that he had asked Prabhupada, my service is to paint paintings for Krishna. I'd like to show you a number of paintings and you can tell me which one looks most like Krishna. So he set up a number of paintings and he said, they're all Krishna. And he was a little disappointed, and they taught me, the discussion went to other things, and then he came back to the same question again. Because he wanted to know, I'm supposed to paint Krishna, what does Krishna look like? And Prabhupada said, they all look the same. That Murali Dhar said, well, supposing it's just a child's picture with stick legs and a stick flute and, you know, a round head, and it said, there's the peacock feather, there's Krishna's flute, there's the cows, there's the river Jamuna. That's Krishna. You know, Murali Dhar said, I didn't know what to say after that. Because, you know, his paintings are exquisite. They're not stick figures. They're very, very talented. So the essence is the love and devotion with which we offer something. You know, in response to your question. And whatever stirs that love and devotion, that's the process of devotional service. That's the test. Like your question, how are we advancing? It's a test. We're drawn to Krishna. We want to offer something to Krishna with love. And as we want to offer something to Krishna with love, Krishna will then show us how to offer it very nicely. We'll want to, and Krishna will give us the ability to. But the essence is not the form. The essence is the essence. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is. That's the gift of Srimad Bhagavatam, to awaken our attraction for Krishna. Does that address your question? Okay. Anything for the ladies' side? Okay. Let's have a little kirtan. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We'll have Visiting Radha Kund Part 2. Bring your kids, they'll like it.